my name is Michael Rosario from Saugerties, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show during the fourth day of voting in this election cycle. And this election cycle and voting this week will be the main topic of the show this morning. We'll hear reports about where and when to vote. We will hear the WGXC congressional report about what the local Congress people and the candidates running against them have been up to this week. And we'll hear an overview of the election in the Capital Region from our friends at WOOC. So stay tuned. There's also the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin's song. And it's time for the WGXC local news. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Turn out to Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th for drone performances from Greg Davis, Hudson's M. Geddes Gengris, Troy's Ben Saraton, and Jay Ashdown. They all perform drones at Saturdrone at Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, November 5th from 8 to 11 p.m. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's how you cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Kathleen Moore reports for the Times Union that North Colony School Superintendent D. Joseph Kaur said in an quote, act of hideous overt racism, unquote, someone wrote racial slurs outside of the only school in the district led by a black administrator. The vandalism occurred at Fort Ferry Elementary School in an area where there are no security cameras, Kaur said. The vandal also shattered a window at a back entrance and drew obscene pictures on the exterior walls of the school. Maintenance workers discovered the damage on October 30th, and they were able to remove the graffiti that evening. Police are investigating. Principal Casey Parker was at work greeting students as usual on October 31st. Parker taught previously in the Albany schools and served as a principal and building administrator in the Troy schools. He was appointed principal of Forts Ferry in July and is the only black principal in the district. where 62% of the students are white and 7% are black. In a statement, CORE said the district, quote, will not shy away from the fact that this act occurred at Fort's Ferry, where Dr. Parker, a black man, became principal in July. We need to recognize the ugliness and pain of this moment, and we must, in word and deed, stand up and say racism has no place in our schools, unquote. CORE asked the community to join with him and, quote, denounce this hatred, unquote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Voting began on October 29th and continues every day, except November 7th through November 8th, with ballot decisions about governor, Congress, several judges, and an environmental bond act. After the first day of voting, there was anecdotal talk of a large turnout. Diana LaRose of Palinville helped with the polls in Ulster County, and the 19-year veteran of working elections said in the Daily Freeman, and I quote, I've never seen this many people for a midterm, end quote. Kelly A. Miller-Simmons, Republican Commissioner of Columbia County Board of Elections, said in the Register Star, and I quote, for the size of the county, we think we'll get a large turnout. We've planned for a good turnout, end quote. Mid-Hudson News reported that most of the ballots cast October 29th and 30th in Columbia County were from Democrats. Two-thirds of all votes were made by Democrats on the first day of voting, and nearly three-quarters of the votes on the second day were cast by Democrats. Democrats cast 1,290 votes to the Republicans' 209, while conservatives cast 18 votes. Independence Party voters cast 29, Working Family registrants 7, Green Party voters cast 3, and Libertarians had 1 vote. Sam Hodge, chairman of the Columbia County Democratic Committee, said, and I quote, our party has been working hard to get people to the polls early, and the numbers were evidence of the enthusiasm Democrats are feeling for our candidates, end quote. Spectrum News reports on the first 2 days of voting, 261,735 votes were cast statewide. Voting on more than one day in New York only began in 2019, so there is no midterm election to compare turnout. In the more popular presidential election of 2020, during the beginning of the pandemic, 422,166 votes were cast on the first 2 days of voting. There was at least one local glitch with the first day of voting. Mid-Hudson News reported in the city of Middletown, the internet went down and the printers that spit out the actual ballots were not working. A poll watcher announced a repair person was on the way to fix the problems, but his arrival time was unknown, and most people lined up to vote left to return or not some other time.
Pete DeMola reports in the Times Union that Albany police arrested a 24-year-old Gilboa man for first-degree aggravated harassment, a felony, on October 28th. The man, unnamed in the story, is accused of placing anti-Semitic and racist stickers at several University at Albany campus locations last week. The man took photos of his crime and then shared those images with a TV news station to draw attention to his hateful views. Campus police said last week that the stickers are associated with a group that is reported to have distributed hateful propaganda in several states. Campus officials said he had no ties to the school. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports for Spectrum News that Republican Joe Pennion and Democrat Chuck Schumer debated October 30th, the day after voting began in their contest to be New York Senator. Schumer is the incumbent and current majority leader in the Senate. Schumer said, and I quote, in the last 2 years under my leadership, the Senate has had the most productive session in decades, end quote. But Pennion argued Schumer has not been successful. Pennion said, and I quote, he's a failed senator. He's failed the people of this state on multiple occasions, end quote. Even though inflation is a problem worldwide after the pandemic, Pennion blamed it on Schumer. Pennion, a former anchor on the radical right-wing cable channel Newsmax, said, and I quote, COVID did not cause inflation. The response to COVID caused the inflation. The printing of money, $6 trillion worth, to oppose that virus of foreign origin, and we still have not held them accountable, end quote. Schumer pointed out bills passed that work to reduce inflation. Schumer said, and I quote, starting next year, the most a person can pay for prescription drugs is $2,000, end quote. That's a real cap. it's going to reduce inflation, end quote. Voting continues through November 8th, and the winner will represent New York for 6 years. Read the full story at Spectrum News.
Daily Freeman reports that a bill sponsored by State Senator Michelle Hinchey requiring the presence of opioid medications on state college campuses has been signed into law by Governor Kathy Hochul. Democrat Hinchey of Saugerties said the legislation will help increase access to life-saving opioid overdose reversal medications. The measure requires SUNY and CUNY schools to maintain a supply of opioid antagonists, such as Narcan, in all college-owned student housing, as well as train resident assistants who live in student residence halls on how to administer the overdose antidote. Hinchey said in a statement, quote, requiring Narcan in all SUNY and CUNY housing with trained student RAs who live with their peers and are often in the best position to administer this life-saving medication will save countless young lives and transform on-campus safety, unquote. According to Hinchey's office, more New Yorkers are dying of drug overdoses in a 12-month period than car accidents, suicide, and homicide combined. She represents Hudson Valley communities with some of the highest rates of opioid overdose deaths in the state. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Lorna Sherratt Littleway in the Columbia paper reports about the issues voters face if they turn their ballots over this fall. There is one statewide yes or no proposal on the back of the ballots in New York this year. The Clean Water, Clean Air, and Green Jobs Environmental Bond Act of 2022 would authorize the sale of $4.2 billion in state bonds to fund environmental protection, natural restoration, resiliency, and clean energy projects if voters approve. Locally, depending where you vote, there could be other issues on the back of the ballot. Voters in North Chatham, Claverick, Germantown, Valencia, and Hudson decide on proposed budget increases. In Hudson, there is more on the back of the ballot as voters there make a decision on a proposal to redistrict the city's 5 wards. And in Catskill, voters decide whether to allow cannabis lounges in a permissive referendum that attempts to overturn the decision against lounges by the town board. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, scattered showers mainly before 4 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 66 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 50 degrees. And on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 65 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 42 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM on Tuesday, November 1st, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Tune in the WGXC Congressional Report with all sorts of news of note about what's going on with the representatives in the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts and the candidates running against them this fall. Then at 10 a.m., David Pena Guzman talks about the new book he's written called When Animals Dream, The Hidden World of Animal Consciousness, with Justin Maiman on the Ginger Radio Hour. 11 a.m. Early Electro Mix features the works of Bernard Herrmann, Johanna M. Beyer, and Joan La Barber, among others. And then at noon is time for the Vinyl Freedom Show, live with DJ Patty Boone. Bill Fontana is the featured artist on the Radio Art Hour at 3 p.m. And at 6 p.m., Altogether Now has a midterm election special. And then Eva Wartell celebrates the Day of the Dead with music from Haiti on Music for the Masses at 8 p.m. before the Battlefield Earth Show, live from Dan Seward, somewhere in Columbia County, on 90.7 FM at 10 p.m. WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Have you ever wanted to learn to needlepoint? Well, on Sunday, November 6th, there's an Introduction to Needlepoint class from noon to 2 p.m. at the Glens Falls House in Round Top in Greene County. This two-hour class is led by mixed media artist Becca Van Kay and focuses on five basic stitches of needlepoint. So that's Sunday, November 6th from noon to 2 p.m., the Introduction to Needlepoint class at the Glens Falls House in Round Top, led by Becca Van Kay. You can find out more information on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Oh, hey, man, I haven't seen you around for a while. Where you been? Oh, you know, I just been woodshedding. Oh, yeah, where's that? Oh, out in the woodshed. Oh, cool, dude, cool. What you working on? Oh, you want to check it out? Yeah, I got it on my mini disc player. Oh, yeah, let me hear it. Yeah, that's something I've been working on out in the woodshed. Oh, yeah, I like that sound, man. Hold on, let me play you something I got on my new DAT. Yeah, it's a DAT player. I've been working on it outside in the garage. Hold on, let me get it for you. Okay, put your headphones into this magic. Oh, that sounds eerily similar, but I really like it. Yeah, hopefully we can play together sometime so we can gang up on some serious power chords. Like this one? What about this one? Yeah, I like that one. We'll see you around, man. Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday night from 10 p.m. till midnight. Tune in.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 in Medusa to 56 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 53 degrees. Snow falls today 1,800 miles away in Wyoming. Locally, it is just rain falling across the listening area today. It will be gone by dark and we will see a high temperature of 65 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 50 degrees. Then tomorrow, we get a high of 66. Winds will be around 9 miles per hour, making it cool. Time to start dressing in layers if you are not already. 36 degrees overnight takes us into a wide-ranging Thursday with a cold morning and an afternoon that tops out at 65 degrees. Friday will be similar with a high of 68. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:49 a.m., high tide at 9:31 a.m., low tide again at 4:02 p.m., then high tide once again at 9:51 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees, and the current strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 5:37 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see incoming solar wind streams should arrive this weekend. Solar wind speed is currently 435.8 kilometers per second at 5.1 protons per milliliter. radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 56. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ellen Donovan of Medusa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
What's the most important issue?
Getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't,
well,
that you
I'm
don't
not,
like?
Well, I'm not going to, you know... I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay. It's something that I'm not, that I don't care for.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Mr. DePapp specifically targeted the Pelosi home to confront Speaker Pelosi.
San Francisco District Attorney Brooke Jenkins announced an attempted murder charge against 42-year-old David DePapp, who was accused of attacking House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband with a hammer at the couple's California home. Speaker Pelosi was in D.C. at the time. The charges were announced after the Department of Justice charged DePapp with federal assault and attempted kidnapping. DePapp reportedly embraced far-right conspiracy theories online, and President Joe Biden cautioned the attack as the latest consequence of the Republican Party's extreme fringe.
It's one thing to condemn the violence, but you can't condemn the violence unless you condemn those people who continue to argue the election was not real, that it's being stolen.
Some members of Congress are calling for increased security, and the Capitol Police are reviewing the break-in. Just 1 week before the midterms that will decide who controls Congress, Republicans have an edge over Democrats in polling. With voters focused on inflation and the risk of a recession, podcaster Joe Rogan suggested the election will be dominated by those in the silent majority.
The red wave that's coming is going to be like the elevator doors opening up in The Shining.
However, California Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell is optimistic.
I'm looking at the early voting numbers in Arizona, in Georgia, and especially in California, and this is going to be a turnout that exceeds any midterm election in our lifetime. And I think that inures in the favor of Democrats.
In the battle for the Senate, Real Clear Politics projects 47 Democratic seats and 53 Republican. And Republicans have a nearly 3-point advantage on a generic congressional ballot. Former President Donald Trump asked the Supreme Court to keep his tax returns hidden from the House Ways and Means Committee. In an emergency filing, Trump reiterated arguments that an appellate court had previously rejected, including that the committee requested his returns for the sake of exposing him. Hillary Clinton is asking a federal court to order Trump to pay her legal fees over a suit he filed alleging she and others conspired to undermine his 2016 campaign with accusations of Russian interference. Trump is currently appealing the dismissal of the lawsuit by a federal trial court. The Supreme Court heard arguments in two potential landmark cases over how colleges and universities consider race in making admissions decisions. The main sticking point is whether the schools are trying hard enough to find race-neutral alternatives in order to achieve diversity. Justice Clarence Thomas dismissed the argument that diversity automatically creates better outcomes.
I guess I don't put much stock in that because I've heard similar arguments in favor of segregation, too.
The conservative wing of the court questioned the lack of clarity around when the need for affirmative action would end, while the court's three liberals stressed the importance of using race as just one part of college admissions decisions. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find RE Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. As a voter, you may never have used an absentee ballot, which is a legitimate and secure way of voting for millions. Today, we're covering the basics of voting by absentee. If you're sick, can't get off work, out of town, or disabled, most states allow for you to use one. You must first apply, so that means contacting your city or county elections office or website for details. You'll be given an application, your voter registration checked, and asked to provide an ID. In most cases, this can be done through the mail, provided you can send a copy of your ID. 15 states use a no-excuse absentee system. It requires that you apply each time and provide identification or verification, but no specific reason needs to be given. Ballots are mailed to you, then mailed back, dropped off in person, or depending on state rules, returned by family members or someone you designate. For absentee ballots, there is typically an outer envelope and an inner envelope. After completing your ballot, the inner envelope that contains the ballot usually has a sworn affidavit, signature line, and date. Make sure to put a return address on the outer envelope and provide postage if it's not prepaid. The lack of any one of these can invalidate your ballot, so follow the directions. In most states, there's still time to get an absentee ballot if you need it, but do it now. We have a link to Rock the Votes tool to find absentee voting rules in each state at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Early voting begins in New York this week, with in-person early voting starting on Saturday, October 29th. Early voting has been a popular option with New Yorkers ever since it was introduced in 2019. That first year, over 250,000 people voted early. Jeanette Senecal, with the League of Women Voters, hopes people will vote early if they can, although she worries whether they have the right information about how to cast their ballots.
We had the pre-COVID rules, then we had COVID rules, and now we have the semi-post-COVID rules that people are going to be following. And so every voter really needs to confirm what the process is.
Senecal adds, with new rules surrounding voting, it's like being a first-time voter all over again. She also recommends that people be especially careful to understand ballot initiatives, some of which are cleverly worded to ensure they're not voting against their own interests. Anyone who needs to confirm how to vote can visit vote411.org or the New York State Board of Elections website. Senecal thinks turnout could be high this November, given some of the issues at hand. A recent poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation found half of registered voters describe themselves as more motivated to vote than in years past. However, no one political party holds an advantage. Overall, Senecal wants people to take advantage of their rights and vote.
People really want our democracy to work for the people and to make sure that we're running free, fair, and accessible elections because the people need to make the decisions.
She says voting is the only way to ensure that people's voices will affect their communities. A recent Marist College poll shows some of the top issues for New Yorkers are inflation and preserving democracy. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Daily Freeman reports that voting this year goes from October 29th through November 8th. On October 29th through November 6th, ballots will be cast at a limited number of locations and then is at precincts on November 8th. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, October 29th, Sunday, October 30th, Monday, October 31st, Wednesday, November 2nd, Friday, November 4th, Saturday, November 5th, and Sunday, November 6th. It will be available from noon to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 1st, and Thursday, November 3rd. In Greene County, voting October 29th through November 6th will be at one location, the fourth floor of the Greene County Office Building on Main Street in Catskill. In Columbia County, there are two locations for voting, 401 State Street in Hudson and the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building at 3211 Church Street in Valencia. In Ulster County, voters may cast their ballots at the Midtown Neighborhood Center, 467 Broadway, Kingston, at the Ellenville Public Library, 40 Center Street, Ellenville, the Marlborough Town Hall, 21 Milltown Turnpike, Milltown, the New Platts Community Center, 3 Veterans Drive, New Platts, the Socrates Senior Center, 207 Market Street, Socrates, and the American Legion, 2628 Mountain Road, Shokan. In Dutchess County, voting through November 6 is at the Mid-Hudson Library Auditorium, 105 Market Street. In Poughkeepsie, East Fishkill Community Library, 348 Route 376 in Hopewell Junction, the Cornell Cooperative Center, 2715 U.S. 44 in Millbrook, the Broadmen Road Library, 141 Broadmen Road in Poughkeepsie, the Fishkill Town Hall, 807 Route 52, the Rhinebeck Town Hall at 80 East Marcus Street, and the Wappinger Town Hall at 20 Middlebush Road. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
This is the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representative Paul Tonko from the 20th District votes with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Republican Elise Stefanik, currently representing the 21st District, votes with Biden's positions 19.3% of the time. Democrat Pat Ryan just began representing the 19th District and has yet to be included in the rankings.
Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan is figuring out what tools and leverage he can marshal at the federal level to get Central Hudson to fix its billing practices. Ryan called Central Hudson's handling of billing procedures, and I quote, borderline criminal, end quote. Central Hudson has been sending customers bills that are very high and also not sending customers any bills and then sending them several with quick deadlines for payment while, according to Ryan, making, and I quote, record-breaking revenues and profits, end quote. Ryan said, and I quote, this public utility, they need to be answerable to us. I'm going to continue to escalate with every tool I have. I did it as county executive, and I'm going to escalate ever further now as your member of Congress to put and keep pressure on, end quote. Ryan, currently the 19th Congressional District Representative, is running for the 18th Congressional seat this fall after redistricting jumbled the local maps. You can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. The Times Union reports how national political action committees are running misleading local attack advertisements in the 19th congressional district election. The National Republican Campaign Committee, for instance, is running an attack ad against Josh Riley, the Democrat running to replace Pat Ryan as local congressperson, quoting Riley as saying, and I quote, help not handcuffs, end quote, claiming that he is saying that is what violent criminals deserve. But in the clip of Riley used in the ad, he is actually talking about people undergoing mental health issues. And the phrase, help not handcuffs, Riley uses, is a quote from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Riley's campaign website says he is for additional funding for law enforcement and that the candidate, and I quote, is adamantly opposed to proposals to defund the police, end quote. The Times Union also looked at an attack ad against Riley's opponent, Republican Mark Molinaro. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has been running an ad locally attacking Molinaro's opposition to abortion, saying, and I quote, Molinaro supports taking away a woman's right to choose, turning it over to politicians, end quote. Molinaro's campaign attorney wrote a letter to television stations and cable providers demanding they stop running the ad, saying it, and I quote, falsely represents Mark Molinaro's position regarding abortion, end quote. Molinaro has not said he wants abortion to be illegal, but does support a ban after 17 weeks of pregnancy. He has not weighed in on Republican Senator Lindsey Graham's national proposal to ban abortion after 15 weeks. Voting in this year's congressional election begins October 29th and ends November 18th. Read both stories in the Times Union. Kenneth C. Crowe is reporting in the Times Union That Republican congressperson, Elise Stefanik, stood next to Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin on October 24, who faces felony charges for the alleged misuse of campaign funds, and called the charges against McLaughlin, and I quote, a political witch hunt. The FBI is absolutely politicalized and weaponized, end quote. But the charges against McLaughlin were filed by state prosecutors, not the FBI. McLaughlin was indicted in 2021 by a grand jury for grand larceny and offering a false instrument for filing for allegedly stealing $5,000 from his campaign account in November 2021. The scheme allegedly had McLaughlin taking campaign funds through a consulting firm to pay back a loan to a former legislative staff member just weeks after he won his first term as county executive. But the FBI did not bring those charges. Nevertheless, she persisted. Stefanik said, and I quote, we see at all levels the FBI has been weaponized to go after Republicans, end quote, even though the FBI is not involved in McLaughlin's case. But the Times Union reports, and I quote, federal investigators are, however, looking into allegations of ballot fraud in Rensselaer County, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. The Times Union reports about the loan debate between Republican Liz Joy and Democrat Paul Tonko held October 27th for the 20th congressional district election. Tonko, an incumbent, cast himself as a defender of democracy, while Joy actually attended the Stop and Steal rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6th that led to an attempt to violently overthrow American democracy. Joy also opposes basic public health, saying all of society should be put at risk so that vaccine skeptics can avoid getting a safe injection to protect themselves and others. Tonko, by contrast, said that people should be vaccinated for COVID-19, measles, polio, and other dangerous diseases. Joy also claimed she would vote against a federal ban on abortion, but Tonko accused Joy of supporting bans on abortion with no exceptions and said he supports abortion rights. The new 20th Congressional District covers Albany County, Schenectady, Troy, and Saratoga Springs, with voting this year from October 29th to November 8th. Read the full story in the Times Union.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
We're talking with Blaze Bryan today, one of the producers at Hudson Mohawk Magazine, about the upcoming elections for mainly state and federal offices, though there are a couple of local offices in special circumstances. So we're going to jump right in. Obviously, election early voting has started. One of the local races that has propped up has been in District 2 in the Troy City Council, because the previous incumbent, Kibbersley Ash McPherson, was forced to resign for some ballot access fraud type of thing. So, Blaze, what are we seeing in the District 2 City Council race?
Well, Mark, first and foremost, thanks for having me on. Great to be with you. I'll go off of what you just said with Kimberly Ash McPherson. She had to resign because of the ballot stuff that you just mentioned, and as a result, the counselors, by a 6-0 motion, voted Stephen Figueroa, who's now the District 2 representative in the city of Troy. He's running against someone named Ryan Brosnan. And Ryan Brosnan is a Republican. Figueroa is a Democrat. Brosnan, and we had him on, I edited the interview that he did with Corinne Carey a few weeks ago. He focuses a lot on public safety, cleaner streets, getting jobs back in the community. Stephen Figueroa, he focuses more collaboratively on, you know, working with youth and the various offices in the city of Troy to make it a better place. And this is a very significant race because, depending on how this ends up turning out, will dictate the balance of power in the Troy City Council. So if Figueroa wins right now, there would still be a Democratic majority. If not, then the Republicans, and if Brian Brosnan wins, I should say, then that kind of flips back. So it allows the Republican side of things to keep the Democratic mayor and his office in check. Those are pretty much the words of Carmelo Mantello there, the Troy City Council president, not mine. I'm just merely paraphrasing what she said.
Were there any, you know, major issue disagreements that define this race besides the part, you know, the political parties?
Not really that I saw. I mean, it's pretty clear to me. You know, Stephen Figueroa, he is kind of a minority candidate, and I don't want to speak specifically to heritage, but that is certainly, as someone who is completely blind, I noticed a very distinct difference in their voices. Whereas Ryan Brosnan, he is someone, he's a younger person. He went through the trades, so I didn't really notice anything too extremely different, but that's also in a race like that hard to see the similarities and the differences, the differences, because,
well, we have a lot of races to get through. So let's move on. You know, most of the races at the, you know, the state level and congressional level usually are not competitive because lines are drawn to, you know, favor one political party over the other. They're a little bit different this year just because the court, with redistricting new districts, they also took control of the line so far for the Senate and Congress. Certainly in the 46th district with Neil Breslin, the long-term incumbent Democrat, mainly Albany County, running against Rich Amador, a state trooper, probably, you know, Breslin wins easy. But one that has a lot of attention is the 43rd Senate district, which is part of Rensselaer County, Washington County, I think maybe a little bit of Saratoga County. And that's Andrea Smith, social worker, lost a couple of years ago for county executive in Rensselaer County. And she's running against Jacob Ashby, who's the incumbent state assembly member trying to run up for Senate. How's that race shaping up?
Pretty competitively, Mark. And I live in Rensselaer County, and that is one I will and have been paying pretty close attention to. Certainly there are some stark differences there. Jake Ashby very much on the, you know, the bail reform, and we need to just outright repeal it. And Andrea Smith, she takes that more social worker approach and says that any non-criminal stuff relating to mental health should be going toward, or should be directed toward, mental health professionals instead of the police. And that, of course, is a result of what tragically has happened over the past few years with Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, and others. So it's definitely a very interesting race for sure.
Now, in the 44th, which is, I think, predominantly Schenectady County, 44th Senate, you have longtime Jim Tedesco, former city council member, former state assembly member, and now the running for the Senate as incumbent, facing off against Michelle Osterich, who is, maybe a county legislator in Schenectady County. That has become interesting because of a lot of controversy over a group called, I guess, the Kennedy something, which is really not disclosing who they are and have been quite nasty and abusive, going after Michelle Osterich. Any sense what's going on in that particular race?
I really don't know. And having met with Jim Tedesco several times through my advocacy efforts, and honestly, he's likely to win. I really do think so. But with that being said, I can't foresee Tedesco backing any of this stuff up. I really and truly feel that what's happening with this Kennedy group is something completely separate that he doesn't support.
Now, turning to Congress, the two main congressional districts in our Capital District, listening area, seems pretty clear that the incumbents, Tonko versus Liz Joy, Tonko, Democrat, probably wins. And then Matt Castelli versus Elise Stefanik, North Country, big Trump supporter. She now has, I think, almost all of Rensselaer County, a good part of Rensselaer County, at least. She probably wins. The interesting one's a little bit south of us, which gets confusing. Partly, this is where Delgado stepped down from lieutenant governor. Pat Ryan versus Colin Schmidt, Colin being, incumbent state assembly member. Pat Ryan actually is a congressman, won the election for Delgado, run in a different district, Ulster County Executive in the 18th. And then Josh Riley versus Mark Molinaro in the 19th, Josh being the Democrat, Mark being the Republican. I think many people assume Mark, as the county executive, former Republican candidate for governor, would be winning this one, but he lost the special election to fill out the Gatto seat to Ryan by a few votes. And it seems like perhaps the whole country turns on the Riley versus Molinaro race. Any insights into that in general?
Well, it's interesting, Mark Dunley, clarifying the marks here, because Mark Molinaro, let's not forget this, 4 years ago ran for governor. He lost, and he has kind of been going down the political ladder to see where he can land, if that makes any sense, because he was vying for the seat held by Delgado. That didn't work. Okay, so let's try something else. He just seems like a very desperate candidate against Josh Riley, who really not a lot of people know. So that race is going to be, frankly, interesting to see how it all plays out.
So we got about 45 seconds left. Everybody assumed that Kathy Hochul took over as governor from Cuomo, easily wins re-election because a couple million votes more for Democrats than Republicans. But suddenly, it seems Mr. Zeldin, Congressman Zeldin, at least is in striking distance. Some polls have him within 5-6 percentage points. How does that one turn out?
I think Hochul retains the gubernatorial position. Having watched the debate between her and Zeldin, Zeldin just did not seem like he was, you know, coming up with great answers, and Hochul did a nice job of attacking his records. That's
really interesting. Spectrum News, Times Union, Board of Elections, more information. Follow elections on mediasanctuary.org. Talking with Blaze Bryan, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Here is local music from Catskills of the Atlas. That's Jay Woodruff from Catskill on vocals and guitars, and Cole McCormick on bass, and Kenny Rowe on drums and percussion. The song is called Easy Ride from their 2022 album, Where Are We?
The weight is heavy. That was Calling Green Soup from the 2022 album Near Earth from Catskill's Rodney Allen Greenblatt. From the 2022 album Near Earth, this is Rodney Allen Greenblatt from Catskill and a slice of cinnamon pie. Next, we hear from Hudson band Babehoven, their song Marion, their 2022 album Light Moving Time, with Jessica Schoppe on viola and Samuel Lieberman on flute.